Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Human Spirit Radio Network. This is Jessica, engineering the show for Sarah McCroskey, healer, teacher, author, and founder of the Human Spirit Radio Network. Sarah McCroskey is an expert in energy medicine and a leader in awakening human consciousness. Down to earth, with a dozen years of clinical experience creating profound healing results, Sarah's vision of what is possible empowers clients and audiences to fearlessly embrace the arc of human evolution and live their unique spark audaciously. Becoming free from conditioning, personally constructed limitation, and physical-emotional imbalance, Sarah promotes a living path partnered with spirit, walking her talk with humor, passion, and clear-sightedness. Sarah offers teleseminars, training workshops, and one-on-one healing sessions by phone, in addition to bringing forth her vision for the Human Spirit Radio Network to provide free, life-giving content and internet radio broadcasts to a worldwide community. Here's Sarah.
Thank you, Jessica. Welcome, everyone, from the San Francisco Bay Area. My guest today is Caroline Casey, astrologer, radio host, author, and poignant reclaimer of soul-refreshing cultural context. Caroline is a visionary activist and the head trickster redeemer of the Coyote Network News, the mythological news service. There'll be much more with Caroline in a moment, but first, as usual, I'd like to bring us together to clear our space and connect with earth and sky. And today I thought to really potentiate the space in honor of Caroline's magic and juju, I'd like to call in the great elements and directions as a way for us to come together. So I'll be using an iteration of Heather Ash Amara's elemental prayers. And after I finish each element, I'll be saying, "Welcome, blank." And I invite each of you to join in with your voice and your energy at that point by saying, "Ho." This will take a few minutes, so please allow yourself to settle in and join in as we call in the powers of earth and nature, spirit and creation. Here we go. Spirits of the East, element of air, we invite you to join the sacred circle. May you ally with us as we ally with you through our awareness and respect. Power of breath, wind, and mind, please answer our prayers. Remove mental obstacles and fear, and infuse our being with the essence of air. Bless us with the wisdom of clear perception. Direct our attention to our core integrity, and ground us in faith between earth and sky, balancing your element within us. Help us know that we are whole and we are one. Welcome, air, hope. Spirits of the South, element of fire, we invite you to join the sacred circle. May you ally with us as we ally with you through our awareness and respect. Power of passion, flame, and energy, please answer our prayers. Remove striving and driving and controlling, and infuse our being with the essence of fear, of fire. Bless us with the wisdom of right action, right timing, and Creator's agenda. Direct our attention to our core integrity and ground us in joy between earth and sky, balancing your element within us. Help us know that we are whole and we are one. welcome fire, hope, spirits of the West, element of water, we invite you to join the sacred circle. May you ally with us as we ally with you through our awareness and respect. Power of oceans, streams, and emotions, please answer our prayers. Renew insecurity and self-importance, and infuse our being with the essence of water. Bless us with the wisdom of open-hearted fluidity. Direct our attention to our core integrity and ground us in love between earth and sky. Balancing your element within us, help us know that we are whole and we are one. Welcome, water, hope. Spirits of the North, element of earth, we invite you to join the sacred circle. May you ally with us as we ally with you through our awareness and respect. Power of mountain, tree, crystal, stone, and bone, please answer our prayers. Remove obsession and craving, imbalance, and infuse our being with the essence of earth. Bless us with the wisdom of true soul nourishment. Direct our attention to our core integrity and ground us in peace between earth and sky. Balancing our element, your element within us, help us know that we are whole and we are one. And finally, center. Spirit of the center, mystery of source, we invite you to join the sacred circle. May you ally with us as we ally with you through our awareness and respect. Power of the unity of the one life force, please answer our prayers. Remove smallness and separation and infuse our being with the essence of infinity. Bless us with the wisdom of non-duality. Direct our attention to our core integrity and ground us in the endless space between earth and sky. Balancing your element within us, help us know that we are whole and we are one. Welcome, center. Hope. The circle is cast. We are between the worlds. So welcome, everyone. Caroline Casey is the host of KPFA's Visionary Activist Show and author of Making the Gods Work for You. Carolyn weaves story and wit with mythos, politics, and ritual magic, with humor and a unique blend of irreverent reverence. Caroline opens hearts and conjures uncommon collaboration as she serves to disassemble all that dishonors life in these times of dire beauty, her words. With her dedication to moving our emotional default setting to woof, woof, wanna play, Caroline Casey is an embodied act, a compelling invitation to humankind, calling us to our unique art, our personal indigenuity, again her word, while asking us to balance, harmonize, and collaborate with everything. For the time is nigh, the dementors of doom and empire, again her term, are in free fall, and all of life's intelligence is pointing the way. Welcome, Caroline.
Ah, perfect. Thank you so much for soothing us and gliding us in for our, may our ride be smooth in this wild surf. tide. Yeah.
Yes, high tides, high tides. Yes, well, I know you mentioned that today is Terrence McKenna's birthday.
Yes, I thought that was perfect. A little shout out to our ancestors. We have a solar eclipse, new moon in Scorpio behind us, and Neptune dreams and vision is stationing. So the invitation between worlds, it's a kind of an ongoing Halloween, ongoing election. So Terrence McKenna was a great ally bard, bardic wit, and so I think it's great. I think he would be amused that it is his birthday. So a little shout out to him, and everybody can invite in their favorite ancestor as well, because we know that, you know, it's only by collaborating with everything that we can, you know, pull this thing off as we hurtle towards, you know, collapse and our dedication to a renaissance of reverent ingenuity rising from the ashes. So it is an auspicious and opportune time, and great to cahoot with you, Sarah, as you're calming us down. So, you know, as you know, I love cahooting in this form, especially now, because, you know, opportunities are abounding, and we all need each other. I mean, I think part of what was eclipsed is the idea that everyone's done as much as they can alone. And now, and there's so many great connections, I mean, with your work and my work and everyone listening's work, and it's just been kind of separated by one little teeny micro inch, and we now want to connect the web, increase, available to increase synchronicity, that we can all feel a sense of team and support, and no one's alone with any of this. And that's part of my dedication now, which is each one of us, our dedication magnetizes opportunity. So I'm your agent, all of our agent outside Washington, D.C., periodically wondering, you know, why am I here? And then when we wonder, again, each planet representing a living intelligence kind of comes up and with recommendations. And so Neptune Dream says to each one of us, we the gods, the metaphoric animations of nature, recommend that you run on the fuel of wonder. You know, we wonder how we're going to get out of this pickle. We wonder how, because it says, you know, even when we say the word wonder, it's almost like, do this if you're not driving, you know, it's almost like we open up our arms in a kind of beseeching chalice of inquiry as a mudra that attracts the lightning of revelation. You know, we wonder how, oh, there we go. And it is part of that mystery about, the, you know, does synchronicity increase or is it always there and we just become more available to it? These are mysteries. We don't know for sure. But we do know that our experience of it comes when things are pretty wild and we, as Pluto chimes in, when we let go of control so that real power can enter the world, then we're really available, you know, to be danced into place where we can do the most good and have the most fun. So in Washington, you know, why am I here? You know, every now and then I wonder. And then there's a synchronous path opening. So I have been and encourage us all to cross borders, you know, and to speak with those who we may not agree with at first, you know, and to find the common narrative. So last night I was invited to, you know, kind of a very grown-up talk, grown-up meaning exotic to me, mostly men in suits, kind of power-possessing beings, a great, great liberal writers, but also mega conservatives. So I'm kind of going for them right now. And I just wanted to put on our kind of altar of desirable mischief and hijinks and possibilities. So at the ensuing party, I was guided. Somebody said, go talk to that guy. He's the most right-wing person in the room. I go, okay. So we actually had a great conversation, and I just want to spin this out for our team. At this time of collapse and the election, which we may want to report on and honor and animate and many things, but, you know, Republican Party in complete disarray, and so there's the Dementors of Doom. But there are sane, reverent people. And just a little bit about what the right-wing conversational being last night kind of brought up, he said, do you know Edmund Burke? And I go, well, yeah, a little bit, remind me. And he said, well, you know, this issue about big government, small government, he said, it's a silly distraction. It depends. And Edmund Burke's work was, the more we cultivate, you know, inner responsibility and wisdom, the less we need outer government. And I go, oh, this is a good conversation. We can have this conversation. This ties in Buddhism, animism, Edmund Burke, conservatism, progressivism, going, all right, let's talk, because this is the essence of, you know, I think what you're dedicated to, what astrology is dedicated to, which is we now want to be insourcing what we've been outsourcing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, each planet represents a quality of living intelligence that resides within us and connects us to the world. So as we speak of them, we're kind of humming them. So Saturn represents leadership and how we define things and authority. And people who practice kind of, oh, I don't know, boogity-boogity astrology go, oh, Saturn's about fear. And we go, well, no, not exactly. Fear is a symptom that we've given away our authority and then we should be frightened. But that's not the point of Saturn. It's for all of us to be inhaling authority and autonomy. And there are some bonus points now in the sky pattern, as though the gods or whatever metaphor we want to use, you know, going, let's make it easy for humans. Let's have Saturn focus and authority and leadership trining Neptune, 120-degree angle to Neptune, first time in, well over 165 years, and trining Ceres, Demeter, very large asteroid, been promoted to be a dwarf planet, but the goddess of the Earth. So it's a grand trine in water, as you wonderfully brought in, the ocean, dreams, you know, removing insecurity. Yes, that's good. So it says real leadership comes with our collective focused Neptune, visualization and dreams, calling everyone to be a pragmatic mystic. And I love your whole intro, Sarah. You know, remove insecurity, but also, you know, I like saying, let us all hold an energetic field and do good collective work, but relinquish deriving importance or specialness or status from that, because, you know, there are all these different groups, bless their heart, who are like, because we did this thing, then it's like, no, it's everyone. It's everyone. But it says all the ancestors, all the myths, all the dreams, all of our practices encourage us to be pragmatic mystics, really experimenting with how we can hold steady, you know, on a collective field of the desirable. And the election was really good for that. I think lots of people, many people on the ground doing practical, clear, common sense things. But there was a lot of all of us really holding a steady field. And when astrologers were looking at the election chart going, whoa, look at that, Mercury stationing retrograde and yeah, on election night. And
wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm sorry, say what?
That was looking pretty iffy, wasn't it?
Well, yes, except, you know, my dedication and training was, all right, let's look at the description, you know, and I said it was related to a pattern in the election of 2000, and I said perhaps the 2000 election returns will finally come in. but more importantly, let's O-team, let us animate the most desirable Mercury retrograde. What do we want redone, reviewed, re? So we're not passive in the face of predictions or prophecies, because we're in a prediction prophecy storm at the moment, good ones and silly ones and whatever. So we want standards. I share very much with you, you know, let us put on our work table as things waft around, you know, that any divinatory system or spiritual practice is valuable to the extent that it guides each person to their own autonomy, not an external belief, not an external guru, not an abdication of responsibility, but guiding us to our own cahooting. So we did it. We did a great election. It was a redo of the election of 2000. It was a redo of the election of 2004. It was, I mean, I was tweeting and Facebooking like a happy trickster maniac the whole time, kind of live, you know, going, all right, you know, they're contesting Ohio. very witty, steady team, steady, steady. Let's see the, you know, the Secretary of State kind of in the corrupt pocket, you know, of Ohio. You know, let's see him just kind of holding steady and surprising to himself, just going, ah, to hell with it, you know. And then he went backstage and said, oh, never mind, I'm going to sleep, and we can see it going, all right, steady, 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 you know. So, you know, this idea of the power of the collective field, this is what makes Renaissance completely plausible. If we all do, you know, yes, many good things, organizing things and practical common sense things, because, yeah, I did write this book that I still love, Making the Gods Work for You, a tongue-in-cheek. I'm sorry, say what?
I said, which I still love, too, and I wish it were in print.
There are still copies at my website, and it's available on Kindle, I hear.
Oh, yeah, it is available on Kindle. That's how I got it. It's
good. Oh, good.
So everybody who's listening, you can still download the book on Kindle or Nook or any of those kinds.
And I have a few hardback copies if you want
Yay.
To order from CoyoteNetworkNews.com as well. But it is a tongue-in-cheek title, but I'd still love that. You know, it's like the gods, the divine, the invisible are willing to do 50%, but not 51%. So it's an equal deal. They'll work for us if we work for them, forging these alliances. So, and you know, and as you know, I'm very much, you know, that there's the mythic news. There's many ways to tell. There's a million stories all wafting around, you know, and at any moment. And they can be conflicting and they can all be true. Which one are we going to vote for? So I know all of us kind of putting standards in place, going, is it a polarity? You know, we the special people, you know, other people not so awake, into the cauldron, you know, no longer useful. This us, them, this special thing, because mm-hmm. I like saying we don't want to be special because that's kind of celebrity toxic, but we do want to be unique because everyone who's unique
Absolutely.
Encourages everyone else to be unique and contribute their, you know, unique medicine, and we need everybody, you know, again, to forge or to something to conjure, to whatever, a million words, you know, the desirable leading story to... for all good-hearted people to assume cultural narrative lead and response, so we're not just reacting like, oh, isn't that terrible? Oh, isn't that terrible? You know, but
yes,
saying...
and that's that holding steady piece that you're talking about, because if we just get discombobulated and everything, we're reacting to everything, that we can't hold the space for what we're intending to have occur.
Right, exactly. Just so, yeah. So in the radio and the trickster training that I do and all kinds of things, we remind everyone that everyone has. We have so many gifts. You know, it's like all the esoteric texts say we don't need more power, but just to use the considerable powers we have in a more focused and less confused way. You know, all these things like Dorothy's slippers, things we had all the time, but now. They kind of become available by, well, right now. So, you know, I never cease to love reminding myself and others that we have a magic mirror. And what that means is the secular critic within us all, you know, good, holds up a mirror to something unpleasant or to society and goes, look, you know, it sucks in detail. And then the trickster, redeemer within us all, with a wave of the hand, you know, it turns the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. Look at that thing. And then with another wave of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's go. So mirror, window, door, you know, it reminds us about critique and blessing. So what I'm really engaged in and dedicated to in, you know, myriad forms is, you know, kind of literalizing metaphors, because that's Saturn turning Neptune says some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. So metaphors are the incarnational, you know, garb whereby power enters the world. So metaphoric agility and priming the pump of our rich linguistic imagination, really good. So everyone also has, in addition to a magic mirror, we all have a harumphitude composter. A high dudgeon harumphitude composter, which is always very useful. We're practicing these things forever, and we're all allowed to blow it, you know, goodness knows. in which we, you know, compost harumphitude and high dudgeon and judgment before we speak to another. You know, and again, we can slip up, you know, and then back to the dedication, because it allows conversation to happen, and that's part of the Venus model, the whole story of Venus. Venus very powerful now in her own sign, doing many wonderful things. But Venus is the art of inviting, and it says whatever we speak to in another is what we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. So again, always working on these things because we can slip up, you know, and then we pull out our harumphitude composter. But the reason we don't want to judge somebody, we want to discern and diagnose on the way to healing, but we don't want to judge somebody going, oh, yeah, because then we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us, and it's just not, it's not a beautiful thing. Mm. So I do venture in, you know, when we get comfortable in some zone, then we go, okay, you know, ratchet up the degree of difficulty. And it's like, okay, you're pretty good with, you know, spiritually hip people. Now go talk to conservatives. And we go, all right, up the level, you know. And that's why I love saying, you know, for us to be surprising and to use fresh language that people haven't heard before, because then there's no... Then there's a liberated conversation. People don't have a pre-opinion or a defense. And the example I love and I still love, you know, is, yes, I went to the Conservative Political Action Committee last February, and I will be going again in the garb of Abigail Adams, and that's a whole other adventure. But there were a few people to have great conversation, and there was huge toxicity, just, you know, oh my goodness, and violence and whatever. So there were these people, kind of Ayn Rand Austrian economists, around whom I had some judgment, going, who's you? You know, and they were walking with kind of one-eyed, decrepit, dementor-looking people. And I was like, no, okay, compost harumphitude, compost harumphitude. And they all seemed to be named Wolfgang. Anyway, so Wolfgang came up to me and goes, and I was just, you know, dressed as I am with kind of mojo amulets and whatnot, and he's like, you, what are you doing here? Who are you? What are you up to? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm the mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And he said, oh, that is so cool. Anyway, so then we were off in a good conversation. I did not say I'm a spiritual environmental feminist who's really angry at the outrage, whatever, which could have been true, you know, yes, but not useful at that moment, going, all right, how do we find a common story? And in talking to many of our team, when I say I'm off talking to conservatives, they're like, why? Why would you do such a thing? Well, we do need the awakened imagination and to spiral forth an invitation to everyone's best, unique quality now. We need everybody, you know, right-wing golfers, inner-city kids, you know, spiritual radio hosts. I mean, everybody, you know, and to send out an invitation across borders and to even throw the categories. You know, I mean, I have made friends with a quite sane Tea Party guy that I really do like a lot. Not all, but him I can talk to, and we go, all right. And he starts by saying, let's put aside what divides us and find a common story. I go, I am with you. I am with you, my Tea Party brother. You know, let's do that thing. And so I'm considering, you know, having some deep-thinking conservatives on the radio show that I do, which would be quite a bold move for left-wing progressive Pacifica Network. They used to in the early days. And I go, well, let's try this thing. But one of the things I also like about it is that it requires, like, I'm not quite ready, which is a kind of Moon and Virgo refrain. I'm not quite ready because it's going to take, I'm going to need to read more. I need to be reading at least, you know, a portion of as much American history as they have, so to really play. But we like that. We like these, you know, circumstances where they require us to learn more. So I've been invited by this team of some liberals and some conservatives, but they do a very good thing. Many of them are dressed as the founding fathers. A right-wing constitutional lawyer, Bruce Fein, loves to be James Madison, and, you know, then there's Patrick Henry, and the Tea Party guy loves to be Thomas Jefferson, but they're like, oh, we're all guys, you know, come join us and bring in a woman. And it was interesting. I mean, in Googling and researching American history, and I realized, oh, I need more, I found some great things. So we love these opportunities that require us to learn more. Before the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, 52 women in North Carolina got together 6 months earlier and signed their own Declaration of Independence from British rule. I'm like, wow, you know, I haven't found anybody who knew about that. You know, it's there, but we go excavate, you know.
Yes.
But I'm sorry, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So we go, yeah, and I haven't done the chart for that one yet, but it's like, okay, we got these supplementary astrological charts. And but I was looking around, you know, going, there's got to be a spicy woman, you know, but it was awfully constrained, my goodness, you know, 1776 and before, for women going, oh, and then I was like, okay, Abigail Adams, you know, and I did her chart, and I go, okay, she's spicy, she's got planets in Scorpio with the image of a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway, and I go, why Abigail, you know, what spiciness were you not completely allowed to express, although there was quite a lot. She was certainly the intellectual equal of her husband or really of any man at that time, while having babies and a dead baby and farming and carrying the whole incredible competence. Like, oh my, so I'm reading her letters going, all right, come on in, Abigail. And it was she who wrote to John her husband, Adams, while they were writing the Constitution, going, remember the ladies. You know, I know it'll be a long time before there's equality, but start now. You know, so what would she do now? Anyway, so I'm going in. I'm going, all right, let me read the letters. Let me get more, you know, founded, you know. So that's part of the ongoing experiment. One of the things that was useful last night at this grown up and therefore exotic to me, it was to honor a wonderful writer for The Nation who's 86 and still sharp as a tack and writing great, discerning things, Norman Bimbaum. But so many people from many different, you know, were honoring him because he was always learning. And as he got up to speak, he was like, and so I went to these difficult places and England was really difficult, and the church was really difficult for me to encounter because I was grew up and still am this radical, you know, but I found nuggets of, okay, a deep sense of history and time, okay. So everywhere he went, he was always learning and always crossing borders, and I love that. So everyone at the party, there is, as there is now, you know, these conversations that want to happen. Everyone was talking, you know, separately, but really together, unbeknownst, about, you know, finding a common narrative, you know. One of the things I was talking about with this, you know, uber-conservative guy that I might, you know, once I've read more, have on the radio. But, you know, because you know this from my work, too, when people say, you know, grumpy things, you know, including, you know, myself, you know, rah, 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 we go, until now, or it used to be until now that, you know, but now, and so everybody, of course, says these grumpy things. The problem with this is that, and the problem with Americans are they're so stupid, and the problem, you know, we go, until now, open it up. And he was like, oh, well, okay. And I said, you know, when systems collapse, we're in a huge mega-collapsing system. We don't need, you know, astrology necessarily, but it is a frame story. And so from now well into 2015, Pluto death rebirth in Capricorn structure of world is squaring 90-degree angle to Uranus, trickster innovation, disruption, freedom in Aries. So there's a million ways this speaks to us. But what I brought up last night, talking to uber conservatives, is when structures collapse, you know, on myriad levels, Republican Party, bridges, dental work, you know, whatever, it liberates the energy that had been invested there for unusual, you know, spellbreaking cahooting. And I said, you know, for instance, in New York, there's FEMA, you know, the disaster in New York in which the earth herself reassumed narrative lead in the campaign, you know, Hurricane Sandy, the word Sandy, name Sandy comes from Cassandra, she who was cursed to not be believed. You know, and as though that storm said, believe me now. And in the rubble, however, there's FEMA doing much better than Katrina, but nothing adequate by itself, which is why, see, talking to conservatives and everything, we go private sector and public sector. We need everything. We need everything. We need government. We need ingenuity everywhere. And I said, so, you know, people found themselves, you know, the Occupy movement in New York and in Staten Island and Long Island and New Jersey was doing phenomenal work. They were actually feeding the FEMA workers from their trucks. And they were right next to the extremely conservative Republican firemen, all of whose, you know, and policemen, you know, of Staten Island. They were working together. And when I visited New Orleans after Katrina, you know, FEMA completely useless. And but who was on the street was kind of left-wing hippie anarchists from Berkeley and right-wing Christian evangelicals working together to give people hot showers and food. And we go, yeah, okay. Like this. So it's terrifying and then exhilarating, again, as we have the opportunity to guide the liberated energy. And all of this, I mean, this is kind of big story, but it is all microcosmed and customized in our own personal experience, you know, personal structures and identity, you know, for each person are kind of like, well, who am I and what am I doing and how do I need to reinvent what I do and... Oh, this is collapsing over here, and which is why I love, you know, what you're doing, Sarah, which is to gather in this calm way, because we can get fried. talking to our ally Richard Olson, I was saying, you know, everybody's emerging from the underworld in their own version, but I said, well, Neptune's stationing, so it's kind of like whoa, punctuated by periodic panic attacks, and then whoa. So we do want to kind of help each other, and again, whatever guides us to, like, innocence, you know, what you did at the beginning, deep, soothing, calm, you know, what a friend of mine calls the innocent dignity of our child heart, where there's no, like, oh, you didn't do that, and you didn't do this, and what about this, and what about that, and go, shh, shh, shh. So I love your very soothing, calm guidance into our convening here, and I did tell you backstage in the green room about the green room, and I like us thinking about that. Mercury's retrograde, and, you know, again, the messenger god. It's stationed on election night, and we did a great we re-elected some pretty good people. We re-elected Sane Reverence, and I know we can pull out Harumphitude Composter to compost our progressive Harumphitude, but go, no, but there's mythic stories, too. And Obama re-gave his 2004 speech, which was appropriate. You know, actually, the last couple of paragraphs was verbatim from 2004. Mercury retrograde, he regave that speech, but with a kind of rousing pertinence, you know. And we can compost our cynicism and be wise as serpents and gentle as doves in these many forms. But we are kind of in the green room. And backstage, Mercury goes direct on November 26th, right before the corresponding lunar eclipse, whose images let us all be an oasis of the waters of life and let us all dedicate to the restoration of the waters of life. So I'd mentioned to you and Jessica backstage going, oh, because you said we're in the green room, and I go, oh, do you know why we call the green room the green room? Everything is so beautiful if we kind of archaeologically excavate it back to its origins, and then we're in this living and wonderful, heartening realm. So the green room is called the green room. It's from Greek theater. It was backstage. And each actor, regardless of their role on stage, because we're all in a mystery play, everybody's got a role to play, but would spend time in the green room, called the green room because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. So each actor, regardless of their role, would dedicate themselves to the beautiful flora and fauna of this beautiful earth before they went on stage. We go, oh, we love that thing. So we're kind of backstage now. We're kind of in our, you know, we were in the green room before we entered the show, which is another kind of a green room, and here we are atmospherically kind of in the green room dedicating before the curtain goes up and there's another round of activity, which is kind of the last week of this month as one. So we're getting ready and forming our dedications of our kind of manifestos of dedicated devotion. It says it's always a good time to do that, but it's really you know, co-operators are standing by. If we, each one of us, kind of write out, doesn't have to be any big daunting deal, you know, our manifesto of dedicated devotion, what are we dedicated to? What do we want to feel like? What do we want to feel like to others? And see, the gods, the animators, the whatever say, don't worry about how, that'll just get in your way.
Mm-hmm.
Just what, you write it, we'll book it. We go, okay. So,
yeah.
And with the likes of yourself, I think it's a great time in cultural renaissance for us all to cahoot and experiment with, you know, holding cultural narrative lead, you know, and holding a steady field of the desirable. So we have, yes, that which wants to be composted, there we go, and yes, everybody's savvy, everybody knows how politics is a game, yes, 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 two-party system, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and there's the mythic news. And I'm really, you know, again, I like to say that magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything in the right angle, you know. But I look at the Barack Obama part of our mystery play, whose name means bless the good. I mean, that's what his name means.
Wow.
Barack means blessing, bless, and Obama means the good. So every time we say that name, even when Fox News says it grumpily, Barack Obama, they're still blessing the good, you know.
Great.
So he's a, you know, Sun Leo guy. Jornus, the trickster redeemer, the liberator, will be trining his son all summer. It's getting pretty close right now. I like seeing him. I like animating the vision. Let us all see the Council of Ancestors. And let's include Terrence McKenna. Why not? Terrence McKenna and Barack Obama's beautiful mother and all the beautiful flora and fauna and ancestors placing a cloak of guiding earth wisdom and protection around his shoulders, you know, so that we whisper, may you be liberated to do the good. And we, as part of, we will back you up. Not only that, we will assume the lead. We will begin now about defining, and I'm always up for our team, you know, I don't want to be, you know, whatever it is, you know, trapped in the role or anything, but inviting us all and magnetizing us all to be magnetizing, especially about the language and the metaphors we use. You know, I spend, you know, too much time on Facebook maybe, some of it's really great. Feel free to like Coyote Network News as a public page. But so many of our team were using this metaphor going, well, we have to really hold his feet to the fire. I'm going, what a horrible image. You know,
yeah.
The sadistic thing, well, we do. And we go, no, tickle. You know, it's the problem with how science is taught and everything, going, we study science from tormenting animals and things and going, oh, look, that little creature reacted with pain to the electric shock and when we rang a bell, and now all we need to do is ring a bell and it goes into shock. Isn't that great? It's like, no, that's horrible. You could be giving them an orgasm or chocolate. You know, why pain? You know, why not the Venusian foreign policy, the D.H. Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, the, you know, the dedication to pleasure, you know, let us, I'd rather place a cloak of guiding earth wisdom than hold anybody's feet to the fire myself. And that's also with our team. You know, so many people say, we're going to fight for peace. We're going to fight global warming. I go, fight is a very hot word in an already overheated planet. We can use it. But see, the trickster would say, we are very big gods. You know, we don't care so much what you do as the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice. And when we, you know, I love what you said, you know, again, in your lead-in, freed from conditioning. We go, yes, we're all burning through our conditioning so that we aspire to be no longer subject to laws, but agents of living principles, you know. And so we can use the word fight, but we want to know we're doing it, and we don't want it to be a habit, you know, because we're not going to fight global warming. It's fighting that got us into this thing. We're going to engage the ingenuity of sane, reverent people. And we know from studies of the brain that the brain is a metaphoric being. When we use the word fight, it sends a cascade of cortisol and adrenaline into our system, like even if we're fighting for peace, you know.
Right.
So So I just, you know, I'm concerned citizens for expanding our beautiful and rich and magical vocabulary, which is also why, you know, when people say we're going to have an impact or impact investing, I go, well, is that really what you have in mind, a short-term violent encounter, you know? Or how about an influence, a long, snaky, curvy, infinitely, you know, whatever, add more words, influence. And they go, oh, well, yeah, that thing, you know.
I love that about what you do, Caroline, is that you always stop people when they're just unconsciously using a word because it's, you know, it's just easy to, it's an easy go-to word, but it doesn't convey what's really in their heart. And you always kind of go, oh, what about, you really want to? I love that.
Right. And then, you know, we're in an ally etiquette realm, which is, you know, again, you know, we're all equals here, you know, but I like putting on our work table, you know, is our manner of relating an offering, liberating, or an imposition, serves empire and tyranny and what is collapsing. So a good standard. So we have our magic mirror, we have our harumphitude composter, and we also have our tyrannometer for, you know, self-observation as well as others. So the manner of woof woof wanna play. So, you know, and we can all cross the line. I mean, Trickster says, you know, cross the line, then you know where it was, of, yes, wanting to offer guidance but not impose correction. So, I can get harumphy too, going, oh, just with our team, just quit using the word fight already. Just, you know, and then I have to go, oh, my harumphitude composter, wait a minute, oh, lo, 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 lo. And then I invite you, you know, here's an offering, something you might think about, because people are on a pretty, you know, hot, reactive thing right now. Don't tell me what to do. And we go, easy. I love, a friend had guided me to this, actually. She was talking to, you know, some malfunctioning computer as though it were a wild animal, going, easy. And as though, you know, may we all speak to ourselves and to others as though we were beautiful, wild, spooked animals on occasion, going,
yes.
You know, easy, steady. Steady, here's an apple, cage doors open, there you go.
Toward ourselves and others, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I often speak to myself that way, going, easy. No. You know, when the you know, and we don't have Sarah around to calm us through the elements, going, easy, steady, doors open. And remembering just our metaphoric, you know, something I always bring in, but this is a new counsel to me, so here we go. All of the myths, all of the guiding wisdoms are available to us. I mean, part of this dynamic now is those who lived through or were born in the 60s, you know, sort of 63 to 68-ish, is the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, death, rebirth, and awakening. Now they are squared. Those two living intelligences, what they represent, are squared to each other. It's kind of like a first quarter moon. It's the first quarter of what was planted in the 60s on many, many levels, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of fabulousness and idealism, but didn't completely live up to gender equality or to mm-hmm. human species, reverent equality with all other species, not quite. But it was a time, you know, late 60s, early 70s, of incredible unlocking of all human esoteric wisdom and practices available. And now is the time to apply those. Going, let's tease it in, and I like being reverently irreverent, and vice versa. So we also say about all teachings: is the trickster welcome? Can the truth be said? Does it encourage, you know, everyone? Does it make life better for everyone in a tangible way? Because this is the game, the infinite game we're being, you know, really woofed into. It's like all of nature wants to either kill the humans or heal them, and they're trying to heal us first, you know. So I love saying the beautiful spiritual technology of Tibetan Buddhism with its incredible discipline of visualization. But the actual lives of Tibetans was 14th century feudalism. That spiritual practice in the past has been tolerated, you know, and sometimes embraced by empire, but not really applied for the democratic well-being of the water and the animals and the bugs and the humans and all beings. And that's, I think, what we're really engaged in right now. So I love the Mabinogion is the kind of Welsh, kind of Arthurian legends, and there's great translations. And in one of them, the elders, these were stories gathered in the 10th century, but much older. But in one of them, the elders gather and they go, uh-oh, men just found out they have something to do with babies. And it was really pretty good before then, you know, everybody raising everybody. But, oh, we can see some difficult things, and we can see men caring about, you know, whose children, and we can see women as property, And we can see humans setting forth on this individual task until they lose kinship not only with nature but with each other, until the earth herself might die, they wrote pre-10th century. And then they wrote pre-10th century. Then what will happen is humans, some humans at first, and then inviting everyone, will keep all the value of their individual selves, and here's where we can talk to conservatives, okay, all the value of their individual selves, but once again join in, I don't remember the words they exactly used, but I used the word intimate cahoots, you know, telepathic, you know, cahooting. Once again, join the community, rejoin the community of creation. And see, that's where we can pick up the polarity conversation and turn it into, you know, a spiraling story, unifying story, going, so it's not just Ayn Rand, everybody out for themselves, or government socialism. It's like, no, we want complexity and individual uniqueness dedicated to common good. Yes, there we go. There we go. So, and you know, everybody's really invited, especially in the Scorpio season, you know, to think of their lives like spiritual detective novels. That's how I work astrology with everybody and myself. You know, why? Who were we born to? So that our suffering or difficulty in childhood is not some credential or justification for whaley tragic melancholy, romantic melancholy, but it's an assignment. You know, so for people to say, well, I grew up in a difficult family where nobody wanted to listen to what I had to say and I was the only magic person or whatever, we go, excellent, you know, fabulous, no whaley there, so you have earned the right to be a voice for those who have no voice. Wonderful, you know. And even deep suffering and tragedy, not credential, assignment. You know, I love saying to people when I do astrological readings, going, well, apparently, before birth, you said, land me in circumstances where I will learn everything that needs healing in the world. And the God said, we have an opening in Trenton. It's perfect. There you go.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to think of our families. I mean, some people were born into perfect families, and they requested something else. But
and
for anybody who's got any kind of kerfuffle. Yeah?
And they're usually lying.
Oh, well, there's that. No, every now and then I'm so surprised, going, you love your husband? Your parents were wonderfully nurturing? Oh, that is so rare. And they go, yeah, it is. You know, it's really cool.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, there's every kind of story. And, again, we need everybody going, well, you are the keeper of the medicine of that possibility then. That's really good. And you can draw that forth in everybody. But, yeah, the composting and the reversal. So, you know,
that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, Caroline, was, you know, us being human beings being storytellers, you know, it's probably something that sets us apart as a species is our storytelling. And yet, you know, telling our story as a reiteration of everything bad that's ever happened to us is not the same as storytelling.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of, the question is, you know, like, where do we get into the victim bonding piece of it?
No.
And how do we begin to really tell our story from the perspective of that the wounding always happens in the middle of the story? There's always the triumphant return.
Right.
And being able to really create and imagine and bring forth and tell the story of the triumph.
Yes, the Act Five. The exactly as you say. I'm just in my playfulness too. I'm just because I work with, you know, Robert Bly for years and everything like that. And I go, and there's the Men's Council and the whatever, you know. And I go, See, there's, Pluto provides us this great composting alchemical cauldron, you know, and into which we can throw things. And when in doubt, throw it in, you know, because if it's good, it'll bubble back up, and if not, it'll go through the necessary changes. So, you know, all tired language, all tired metaphors, give them a rest. So I'm kind of up for throwing, you know, wound as a metaphor, you know, into the cauldron, going, unless you're bleeding and on your way to the hospital, you know, let's just give it a rest on the wound thing, even though it does appear in, as you perfectly aptly say, you know, the Grail legend and all the wounding thing. But these cauldrons of replenishment. And then I just want to go back a little bit. Humans as storytellers, I don't think it sets us apart as species. We know crows, whales, probably, you know, a gazillion beings, they do pass on language and story, and we're interfering with that with our loud, rude noises. But I do think, this is my current pondering, I think, because I live, you know, with a coyote, an actual Sella coyote, and I had a wonderful part wolf guy, and, you know, love all the animals and everybody. And great naturalist friends who are, you know, agents of the fungi, agents of the slime mold that pass on knowledge to the next generation. We go, oh, there's some transmission there. DNA is a storytelling, you know, which is why we don't want to cut it, because we're cutting our ancestral guidance. But, and we do know that, so as I ponder this, I go, I know animals have ritual. I had a cat that used to get up every morning and go down this little path and sit on this stone and wait. And when the sun rose, it struck the cat first. I'm like, oh, Cathenge, that is so fabulous. Going, oh, that is so wonderful, Cathenge. So they have rituals. We know that wolves have theater. You know, we know whales pass on stories and songs and elaborate them. But I do think what sets us apart as species is our capacity to borrow different qualities of intelligence from the animals and the plants. You know, so we look to nature to, you know, for models of leadership, and that's why I love the wolf model, because it's the wolf leader is the one who engages the ingenuity of the pack, and we go, that's good. And I love the goose model, because the lead goose rotates, you know, to not,
Yes, right, I know that one.
Oh, you just got louder in a good way. You know, and plants. So, yeah, I really, again, with so many sane, reverent people, want to animate that the cultural renaissance is where humans become humble, and humble comes from humus, the dirt, in our willingness to take leader, you know, to be guided by nature's ingenuity, you know, and, you know, as wonderful biomimicry ally Janine Benya says, you know, rather than looting nature, let us borrow her recipes. You know, let's borrow qualities of intelligence or things we admire from plants and animals, and let's have it be a reversal, this great reversal, which is available in the field to all of us. I mean, Neptune dreams, vision, water. Water reflects a reverse image. So anything that is discombobulated to recombobulate, or kerfuffled to be de-kerfuffled, or to reverse things. And so I think humans getting manners as a species would be really great. And part of the manners would be to have some humility, and then a willingness to cooperate with the ingenuity in nature to resolve these innumerable rude and sociopathic, lacking in kinship, as the Mabinogian said, would be the crisis that would kill the earth, potentially, and to regain some manners and willingness to collaborate and to marvel. So the more people know, I mean, again, you know, so for each person listening, our dynamic team here, you know, whatever we have an affinity for, it's like, find out more. You know, if you love that color or that plant or that animal or that language or that word, find out more. It wants you to be its agent. You know, learn more about it, because that's part of what you have to contribute to our brew, because in the cauldron we're tossing in the rebirth, and then Coyote is ladling out spirals of liberating opportunity from this cauldron, fresh language, fresh metaphor, fresh willingness to collaborate with the whole larger deal. You know, and I like, you know, I'm working with the team on radio, and also Trickster Council, and which is something you can find out about on the website, coyotenetworknews.com. But somebody suggested, you know, Prop 37 went down, labeling a food seems pretty basic. It wasn't even labeling of it wasn't even banishing genetically engineered food, just labeling it, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
If something's a problem, make it bigger. It's like, let's make that proposition national, you know, and let's make it global. You know,
yeah, make it banning.
Yeah, and make it banning. You know, like, you know, dream big, play fair. You know, it's like, all right, you know, $30 gazillion from Monsanto and other kind of dementors, bless their hearts, you know, taking this thing down. Well, rising, it's like Brother Leonard Cohen says, from deeper places in the heart, we rise to play a greater part. Going down, ha, 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 we'll make it bigger. You know, thank you very much, Monsanto. You know, it's like a, there was a anti-World Bank, you know, kind of protest, and protest's another word we need to change because it means to affirm, but and the World Bank had built a giant, expensive barbed wire fence around it. So at first, all of the protesters were going, wah, 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 and I just said, hey, you know, let's reverse this thing. Thank you, World Bank, for fencing off your dangerous self. And we will now turn our backs to the fence and talk about what we really want to talk about. Yeah, no sense worshiping the thing, like, you know. So, yeah, Prop 37 goes down. We rise and make it national, bigger, more information, more education. Keystone, you know, pipeline, yes, a bigger thing for magnetizing, for encouraging the good in Obama, you know, and in other sane, reverent, and medium sane, reverent people in surprising ways. I mean, the trickster part of us that comes alive in crisis loves against all odds. So it's like, discourage this, no, no, encourage that, so that we're all dog whispers going, no, you know, put your hands up and back away from pillaging the earth. Okay, there you go. And over here, this, yes, over here. You know, so I love the dog whisper as teasing it into the politician whisper.
Yes. Well, you know, just for you to know, we don't get cut off at 60 minutes. So
wow.
We don't have to be, you know, real worried about the time. We've actually got like more like 90 minutes. But
wow.
We will be conscious of the time. But okay, yes,
okay.
I remember one of your wonderful quotes is about that the small thing kind of, or maybe our personal you know, angst, problem, worry, getting kind of blown up. You say Pluto annihilates small intrigue to free up our energy for the larger intrigue of conscious evolution.
Right. Yes. All right. Yeah. We toss into the cauldron, yes, the petty intrigues to participate in the larger intrigue of the transformation of culture. And this is, you know, brings us to ally etiquette. You know, I mean, I work with many good-hearted, contentious groups and people. And, excuse me, I love, you know, Allison Laurie's spicy quote. She says, the reason academic politics is so vicious is because the stakes are so small. And we go, yes, oh, team, oh, little people squabbling in the Zen Center kitchen or the progressive radio room. It's like, no, no, bigger, bigger, make it bigger. There's enough for everybody, and there's bigger. No, you know, and let us tease molecules of democratic animism into our manner of relating. No sense treating each other badly and then proclaiming that we're dedicated to democracy, you know, for goodness sake. So that model of ally etiquette, and I think that's a principle I love, you know, putting on our table and animating. So Uranus, the trickster, it's rising in the east where I am now. Oh, okay. And it's, you know, cahooting with many, many things. So Uranus is, you know, ingenuity, intuition, which means something quite specific, you know, brilliance, lightning, Oya, who summons the winds of change, you know, all that kind of spicy thing. Mm-hmm. And the last word concepts associated with it are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And it was some ways back that I wondered out loud, which we're encouraged to do, no sense being half mad, time to go fully Majnun, crazy for the divine. Going, well, what does democracy, equality, synchronicity have to do with each other? And immediately, pretty immediately, events synchronously stage themselves to make it very clear that when we look down at somebody or up at somebody, there is no synchronicity. It's just sort of flat. I mean, there's other stuff, but there's no synchronicity. When we treat each other well, meaning we all have different roles, but a fundamental backstage, equal, straight across, hey, how you doing? The rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. And what this was I had, you know, I was late on a deadline, like I have been until now, you know. You know, I love British writers saying I love deadlines. I love the swooshing sound they make as they fly by. So I was kind of cringy. You know, I owed an essay. It was a tribute book to Tim Leary, and I was late with my essay. And then I ran to the editor, whom I owed this piece to, and I was like, oh, and he goes, I'm late too. I haven't written my thing. And I was like, oh, thank God, we're equal again. And immediately, synchronicities abounded. We just ran to the right people. That were like, what a relief. Okay, we're all befoibled. Whew, and we're all equal. There we go. You know, so we don't want to outsource, you know, our kind of to our friends, you know, like, oh, I didn't do this thing, going, no, trickster, you know, the deadlines fly by, but good-hearted. And see, the equality model, it says this is what makes the transformation of culture really a sporting and possible adventure. You know, the Dementors, bless their role in the mystery play, we might come back to that, you know, what is that role? Well, we say, you know, In The Lord of the Rings, you know, Gollum's crazy overreaching was actually crucial to tossing the Ring of Power into the crack of doom. Everyone's got a role somewhere, somehow. But in that mystery play, that idea of, again, treating each other equally, which does not mean nice, because nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant, but fundamentally spicy, playful. So the Dementors of Doom, bless their hearts, you know, might have more lawyers and money. But we, you know, all of us, really, including the chipmunks and crickets and galaxies and coyotes and vegetables and fungi, if we treat each other well with mannered respect, hello, brother cricket, plant, cockroach, galaxy, you know, then we have synchronicity, you know, the right listening audience, hello, the right teammates, the right funding, yes, we want to work on our funding team, that's right, our the waters of life and making money and power and sex all sacred again because they sort of became taboo, and moving into the marketplace and reanimating the marketplace as a holy place. And that's also part of the Uranus dynamic. In most world mythology, or much world mythology, the presiding deity, metaphor, intelligence of the marketplace is the trickster. You know, is Oya in Santeria in the Caribbean, you know, again, summons her horsetail whip. So Oya loves purple and eggplants, therefore. And so, you know, in little marketplaces, you know, in the Caribbean and in Cuba, you know, everybody's got their eggplant out there to show that they love Oya. They love the trickster goddess of change, reminding us that the marketplace is not meant to be this, as a young friend says, Voldemort, you know, this soul-killing container box or celebrity hoo-ha place. It's meant to be where the storyteller lives in the marketplace and at the fountain of ingenuity and one of the places of ingenious solutions rising in the marketplace. And so we go, well, yeah, okay, so then maybe that can lift the false taboo between many, many, you know, spiritual dedicated people and their willingness to engage in the marketplace and in resources and money, with standards, you know, with dedication, with backstage standards. May this be good for everybody. So the marketplace becomes, you know, the caravanserai. You know, there's spices arriving from Syria as she emerges from peace, may it be so, or from rubble into peace. There's, you know, Scheherazade, the storyteller, there's, you know, everybody in the marketplace. And then, you know, worthy conversations about the marketplace and government. And, you know, I mean, I think we've all got different histories. I mean, I absolutely love philosophical anarchism and the, you know, the transcending of the state and everything. And yet my dad was a New Dealer with FDR, you know, and so we go, well, what is the value of government, you know, and also now a nuanced and complex conversation, because corporations are so, having lost kinship, really. I think we can say that. I mean, I want to say until now, but I can't quite do it with a straight face. But I want to do it, you know. But the rapacious and incredible, gargantuan, you know, horrific efficacy of destruction that humans right now have. I love Sir Herbert Reid, great British anarchist philosopher, who said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with machines. And we go, oh, let's put that on our altar. You know, so at this point, you know, we need a collective binding of the most rapacious and destructive aspects of corporations, which is why I was also talking to our libertarian team and some of our, you know, spiritual, wonderful hippie youth who are all magnetized by Ron Paul. And we go, many good conversations with Rand Paul and his son, Rand Paul. We want to sit next to them at Thanksgiving as the crazy-ass uncle who's going to cause trepidation. But really, after the soup course, you might want to move. Because I am being granted backstage access, and the libertarian Ron Paul, Rand Paul view on the environment and the XL pipeline is, who cares about a bunch of bleeping squirrels, you know?
Oh, no.
No, that's true. No, we want to know about that. So I was telling our team, going, oh, you think you like legalized raw milk and legalized marijuana and no war? That's wonderful. But you also want nuance to understand that it's open up all collective land to drilling. That's what the libertarian policy is.
Uh-huh.
You got to know that part too. We want nuance to go, we like this from here, but not that thing. We take this and we toss that into the cauldron. And so information, there we go. So we want complex, non-hot conversing, you know, about, you know, what do we want government to be, you know, as an outer representation of our better selves? Again,
yes, which
yes.
is such a better question than not that, not that, not that, not that.
Right,
what,
and so many of our team.
What do we value in X? What do we honor in this? You know, it calls forth something rather than is just anti-something.
Definitely. You know, and again, you know, it's sneaky. I mean, I have offended some people, and sometimes I didn't mean to, and sometimes it was fun. but because when people go, well, no, it's all a con, the two-party system is that, you know, and I go, critique without vision is complicitous with dominance and empire. You're being an unwitting agent of empire. Now, often people go, and I go, oh, you're proving my point. but it is a deeper point. If we are just finger waggy, or pulling rank, you know, again, a lot of our left wing team, and I am part of that thing, you know, go, well, if you knew what I knew, if you were as politically sophisticated, then you would be as cynical as I am. And we go, oh, there's a flag on that play. You know, colonial pulling of rank, special elitism, an inadvertent service to empire, you know, 5-yard penalty, declined. Let's go on. Now, I don't mind offending people if they know. I don't want to offend anybody who is innocent and doesn't know, you know, again, with a point, but it is woof woof wanna play. So it's a spicy line, but we're not, we don't have an over much amount of spice, let's put it that way. And our team has been criticism averse. And I am very in favor of standards. You know, especially as the 2012 hoo-ha comes down, and I have my own wonderful conundrums. I will be participating in Synthesis 2012, which is this giant hoo-ha thing of, you know, Chichen Itza. I was going to Chichen Itza anyway with actual Mayan scholars over here, and then there's this big thing, and I go, well, some of that I don't love because it's whatever, you know, and yet, you know, gathering to animate a collective guiding story, yes, there's great merit in that. So, yes, I will participate. And it was very fun because the organizers, I hemmed and hawed, and I was like, I'm not in accord with some of your presenters, you know, bless their hearts, you know, because there's some plastic shaman things and some specialness things, and then there's some good things, you know. And I said, can I come play with my standards? And they were like, absolutely. I go, now we're talking. Okay. So I don't know how that'll work, but I do like standards of discernment. And just, you know, for our team to just say specialness, no. So when people say, we are one of the 144 saved guardians of the angels of light, who, and I go, no. No, I'm not animating. I'm not voting for that story. Or some people are reptile, bad people, and then there's the awake people. I go, no, not voting for it. You know, not useful. Sneakily empire-ish, you know.
Yes.
Or the, that's right. So I just want to put those standards for our team going, no, into the cauldron, you know.
Yes.
Everybody invited, not special, and knowledge good, you know. So, you know, when somebody came up to me at a, you know, spiritual cute gathering and said, I just think of the Mayan gods as the gods of love, I go, they're going to rip your heart out, you know. They would not refer to themselves that way. It's very complex, the Mayan gods and the Mayan culture, and I do not presume. I have friends who are, you know, academics and actual Mayan scholars for 40, 50 years who, you know, who are looking with, you know, bemusement and appreciation and appallingness at all this stuff, and there is some element of spiritual colonialism going, oh, because people don't know much about the Mayans, so everybody would be just sort of saying what they were saying anywhere and then just adding on 2012, you know. So it's a dodgy thing, but I think we can have great delight and distill the positive dynamic, you know, while, see, Trickster just likes bringing in standards going, yes, well, the Wrathful Dakinis, do you know them? I'm sure they know you.
Yes, I do. I do.
Well, I just want to bring them in as a you know, we're stuck with the Greek and Roman names for all the planets and gods and everything, but Pluto is the soil, the underworld, the humus. Pluto represents large by energetic symbolism, you know, even if not by mass in Pluto's case. Pluto represents that in nature which metabolizes poison. And we say, you know, let all mythic figures be understood as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. So, yes, the Wrathful Dakinis are a great example because they pre-exist Tibetan Buddhism. Tibetan Buddhism kind of gets a hold of them and makes them kind of pretty and ornamental, but they're not pretty. They're beautiful, which is more spicy,
yep.
And like, woohoo! So they were originally depicted as part woman, part animal, like a woman with great bosoms flying around and a crow's head or a wolf head. Or anyway, that's how they were depicted at first. And they metabolize poison. And they take the poison of anger and cook it into the tonic of wrath, which is fierce protection of all life. We go, ah. They take the poison of seduction and cook it into the tonic of magnetism. Bring everything alive, you know, be spicy. But the stories, there's a great book called Passionate Enlightenment by Miranda Shah, a great Sanskrit scholar. And so it's an academic book, but really useful. But she says the Wrathful Dakinis, they would go and they'd sit in the back of an important man's lecture, and they would laugh and weep. And the important man would go, why are you laughing and weeping at my very important spiritual talk? And they'd say, well, we're laughing because it's just hoo-ha, nonsense, and special, ridiculous, pompous twittiness, and we're weeping because people are taking it seriously. But they would do it with such flair that the teacher themselves, so it is reported, would go, oh, nobody's seen through my bogusness. Thank you. Teach me. I've been a dingbat. Teach me. You know, so there is a place for it. It's a dodgy place, right, because we have to be really clean but playful but discerning, you know. So it's a danger zone, but I think it's one that we want to play with about discerning and loving it all anyway, you know, but from a knowledge point of view going, this is hooey, you know. It's like just the discernment. So with my friends who are, you know, actual Mayan scholars, long before Jose Aguiles, long before the Harmonic Convergence, you know, these guys toiling away and excavating Mayan culture and vases and this exquisite, incredibly complex and ingenious and brilliant calendar and system and entheogens up the wazoo, literally. They were bloodletting. They were doing enemas, public enemas of entheogenic plants. And I mean, it's a very trippy culture. And they probably, they flourish in a wet cycle. And when the dry cycle comes, they cut down all their trees. And I mean, it's infinitely interesting on a lot of levels. And there are many, many Mayans. There's more Mayans than the entire population of Israel right now. So it's not. I mean, there's actual Mayans out there.
There's not a one way that the Mayans did it.
No. Well, and there are Mayan timekeepers, but they're mostly laying low. So during this, wild time. And then, as things would arise, I would, run different people by my Mayan scholar friends, which does not mean they were always right, coming from this academic thing. But it's useful. And I go, what about this person? And they go, harmless. But not a Mayan elder. It's a Hispanic guy who decided he was a Mayan elder, and not harmful except for whatever. Anyway, so I like standards. I like standards going right. Everybody's got their costume, and as long as it's not deriving hierarchy or importance or status, then we're in. Because one of the Mayan scholar lectures I did just go to say, but they were absolutely in favor of, and this brings us back to you, of. Yes, let us be conscious participants and informed and conscious participants in an ongoing collaborative mythology with nature. And now we're back to a really great thing. And that's why the 2012 thing and Synthesis 2012 and gatherings and your radio show and, I mean, everything can be of great value if everything's welcome, we have discernment, criticism, was a sacred thing. Let's make everything sacred because it meant diagnosis. We criticize in order to diagnose, in order to heal, not just some grumpitudinous, self-indulgent thing. And so yes, I mean, we are in a renaissance of, wouldn't this be great? And let's find a common story we can all vote on. So, yeah, so it's a nuanced, complex time, right? I mean, how do you address this wild story.
And my feeling is with, everybody in their different opinion about everything is, when in doubt and always look to your own direct experience. What rings true? We all have it within us. Our own discernment lives innately inside.
Right.
And that's that, that comes full circle with your, with you, the way you hold the Saturn energy, which I think is so beautiful. It's really assuming inner authority, and then from there you really can connect and harmonize with everything from
right.
a place of your own visceral truth.
Right, and see, again, you're so soothing from a relaxed and calm discernment. Let's have a toast all around, to everybody. Let's ladle out of the cauldron now, a toast of calm, relaxed, bemused discernment, as one of our many medicines going, yes, that's very good. And you said, a great thing in which we're in accord, freed from conditioning. Well, these big planets, or what they represent is big, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, they all represent, again, these living intelligences of nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And we're all in that field, of discerning, this great word to bring in. A while ago I said, maybe one definition of what it is to be human is to discern the pattern of evolution, the most lively possibilities available at any moment, and offer ourselves to that. And so all of these planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, they represent, the intensity of going through a gazillion years of spiritual psychotherapy to decondition, in about, 8 months, which is why the mythic guidance and the astrological language is so great. I mean, I love, I love doing readings, you do readings on the phone, and I do readings on the phone, and I love doing them on the phone. I really do. It's sort of like, radio. It's spirit voices right now. We're backstage voices, But I love it when, you know, when people, everybody's got their customized trials about this is a difficult thing. And I love on behalf of the astrological language saying as humans, we would go, oh, whoa, oh my goodness. But as astrologers and mythologists, we go, that's perfect. You're right on schedule. We'd be worried if it weren't turbulent, you know. Here you go. And the myths offer guidance, you know, navigational guidance. You know, how do you descend to the underworld and how do you get back personally and culturally? So we're burning through. I mean, Neptune says we dissolve certainty so real vision can find us. So these are very ancient transits, meaning they require our ancient mind. Neptune, very not modern. You know, the modern world, game of musical chairs, everybody's got an identity or a partner or a job, you know, and the music stops and one less of all those things, and everybody scrambles, although it's getting more chaotic now. But see, the ancient part of us says, I never, ever wanted to play musical chairs. You know, I'm going free range, you know. And in the ancient world, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. It's like, look, that humans run out of certainty. Now we can speak directly to them. They're available. They're humbly available. Pluto, a little rougher. Pluto's burns away everything between us and us, and the value of astrology and these guiding languages is how to cooperate with what wants to happen. You know, because I talk to people every day who are having the same transits, but a very different experience.
Yes.
You know, one, you know, bitter. I lost my job. My wife left me. Whatever. You know, and the other one is I'm liberated from my job and I released with blessing my old marriage, you know, and woohoo, you know, same transit, you know, so
yes.
How do we...
All the way you hold it.
Yeah, and then also,
that
you know,
power of context that you talk about, you know, how you always begin your show with this is your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Context is everything. The way that we hold or the enormous power tool of... you know, animating the space within which something occurs. It's huge.
Oh, nicely said. Yeah. And to realize that we do have backup, you know, that you know, one way I like to think of Pluto is that we get brought to our knees, you know, with a customized descent to the underworld, usually that we would never choose. You know, going, whoo, because Pluto says, I'm going to disrupt everything external from which you gain your identity. It's like, whoo.
Yeah.
And you know, you go, but I like that.
Excuse me for just a minute, but speaking of the external disruptions, we're going to get cut off in about 3 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
So
it's
I
all
just want to give
so
everybody your contact information, because Caroline Casey, you are such a brilliant gem. So... for Caroline's events and schedules, you can go to Caroline's website, which and also she has a Monday evening Compassionate Trickster Experimental Juju Mystery School. And you can go and get all the information about all that, astrological readings, everything, www.coyotenetworknews.com. And Caroline's Visionary Activist Show is on Thursday afternoons, 2 p.m., Pacific time on KPFA. So thank you so much, Caroline Casey, for being here.
It's been a great pleasure, and we will reconvene at some perfect time for the adventures of Venus that we're all in this great sea. And there is a phone number, 888-741-GODS, that now that I put it out, I will remember to pick up the messages. Yes, we will. but thank you. Thank you, Sarah McCroskey, for being soothing and beautiful, great colleague guide.
Yay, great. Yay. Thank you so much. And just for everyone to know, Human Spirit Radio broadcasts are Friday afternoons, every Friday afternoon, 2 to 3 p.m. Different hosts, different possibilities, wonderful programs with really great people. So although we're this on next Friday, since it's a fifth Friday, we won't have a show. But otherwise, when there's just 4 Fridays in the month, it's every Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific, and www.humanspiritradio.com. You can get all sorts of information, old archive shows, And thank you all for being here. Thank you, team, team, team. I love it. And everybody have a wonderful month. I'll be here next month on winter solstice. Amazingly, that's the date of my show. So until then, everyone, have a blessed, blessed time. And love, love, love this planet and one another. Bye.